Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Off with True Blue LA. I'm your host, Eric Steven. It's a solo episode today, but I do have a Dodgers rewind for you. Fred McGriff is on the Contemporary Baseball Era ballot for the Hall of Fame. We'll find out by Sunday if he'll be inducted into Cooperstown in 2023. So the Contemporary Baseball Era Committee is part of what used to be known as the Veterans Committee, which is now split into groups of players at different points in history. So the contemporary era is just someone whose primary contributions came since 1980, and McGriff's first season in the majors was 1986, so he's in that group. So the committee is 16 members. They'll meet Sunday, December 4th, at the winter meetings in San Diego. The results are announced later that evening on MLB Network. Just like the BBWAA, 75% is required for induction, but in the case of this committee, that means only 12 votes. So the Hall of Fame on Monday announced the 16 members of the committee who will be voting on induction from this group. It includes seven Hall of Fame players, Chipper Jones, Greg Maddux, both of whom have a few teammates, or at least one former teammate in this group, and then Jack Morris, Ryan Sandberg, Lee Smith, Frank Thomas, and Alan Trammell. There's a few MLB executives and owners, Paul Beeston, Theo Epstein, Artie Moreno, Kim Eng, Dave St. Peter, and Ken Williams. So that we're up to 13 now, and then you have some writers and media members rounding out the committee, Susan Slusser, who covers the Giants, used longtime beat reporter for the A's, former BBWAA president, Lavelle Neal, who's in Minnesota, and then Steve Hurt, who works for, I believe he still works with Elias Sports Bureau, but longtime statistician. So that's your group. That group's going to meet Sunday at the winter meetings. The voters are allowed to pick up to three Hall of Famers among the eight on the ballot. And then you need 12 votes to get in. So other candidates on the ballot this year include Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling. All three of those had their last year on the BBWA ballot last year. Then you have Dale Murphy, Don Mattingly, Albert Bell, and Rafael Palmeiro. To me, this seems like a ballot specifically designed to elect one or both of Dale Murphy, who won two MVPs with the Braves in the 80s, or McGriff, who hit 493 home runs. The previous method of the air committee ballots were 10 deep. Voters got to pick up to four Hall of Famers on each one. Last year, if I remember right, Gil Hodges was elected in this group. And there were three players elected, I think. Maybe it was four, I don't remember. But back in July this year, Jay Jaffe and Dan Zimborski at Fangraphs modeled what the new system with eight players on the ballot and three choices, what it might produce. And they sort of saw that it increased the likelihood of nobody getting elected in these cases. And it also decreases the chances of multiple honorees. So it could be a little bit limiting. We'll see how the results play out. But Jaffe, in his analysis of Fred McGriff, from his Hall of Fame worthiness over at Fangraphs, said, quote, "If I were among the 16 voters on this panel, I wouldn't include him," meaning McGriff, "on my ballot. But if I had to guess, I suspect he might draw the highest level of support from among the eight candidates. I wouldn't be surprised if he falls short of the 75% or he gets over the line." So it's kind of could go either way, really. For McGriff, in his first 9 years on the writer's ballot, he never got more than 24% of the vote. And then he got 39.8% in his 10th and final year, well short of the 75% required for induction to Cooperstown. So he played 19 years in the majors, most notably with the Braves, also the Blue Jays and the Padres. But his penultimate season was with the Dodgers in 2003. And that's what we're going to look at today after the break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
The Dodgers heading into 2003 had reason to be optimistic. They had a pair of 86-win seasons the previous 2 years. In 2000 and 2001. They won 92 games in 2002. They finished just three games behind the Giants for a wild card spot. For the wild card spot. Keep in mind there were only four postseason teams in each league back then. The Dodgers had missed the playoffs in six straight seasons at this point, and they were starving for pretty much anything. So on New Year's Eve in 2002, they signed McGriff for 1 year and $3.75 million. He was entering his age 39 season, but he was still pretty productive. The previous year, he hit 273, 353, 503 with the Cubs. That's a 125 WRC+. He had 30 home runs, 103 RBIs. He drove in 100 runs in each of the previous 4 years, averaging exactly 30 home runs from 99 to 2002. He replaced longtime Dodger Eric Karros at first base, who was 5 years younger than McGriff, but he only hit 13 home runs in 2002. He hit 271, 323, 399, a 96 OPS+. So it was they were upgrading, really, in theory, at least. The Dodgers traded Karros and Mark Grzelcyk to the Cubs for Todd Hundley and outfielder Chad Hermanson. Hundley played only 21 more major league games. Hermanson played only 11 games that year with the Dodgers, so it was kind of more of a dump than anything from the Dodgers' perspective. At his press conference, McGriff said, quote, this is per Associated Press, "I keep tricking him. When you start playing this game, you don't think about home runs." But despite the modesty, he had 478 home runs to that point in his career, which was 21st all time heading into 2003. I want to say 2003, but it doesn't feel right. So apologies for me continuing to sort of mess up the year. But the point was, McGriff was in line to reach 500 home runs with the Dodgers, something nobody's ever done while with the Dodgers. So he had 10 home runs through the Dodgers' first 66 games. He was on pace for like between 24 and 25 home runs. He needed 22 to hit 500. He was having a down year, but still like reasonably productive. Like to that point, he was 242, 315, 427, 95 WRC plus, slightly below average. Not really, not very good for a first baseman, but not, you know, terrible, right? So he played 63 of those first 66 games, and he started 60 of them, but then he suffered a groin injury and he missed 14 games. That was the first injured list stint of his 18-year, or to that point, 19-year career. So he came back for four games at the beginning of July. He started two of those games, but then he landed right back on the IL with a knee injury. This one cost him 43 games, missing a month and a half. So that pretty that torpedoed McGriff's chance at 500 home runs, at least for 2003. The Dodgers were judicious with McGriff down the stretch. They had acquired Robin Ventura at the trade deadline, and he started a lot at first base. McGriff started only 17 of the last 35 games after that second IL stint. On the season, he hit 249, 322, 428, 13 home runs, 98 WRC plus. So that was the first season of his career under a 107 WRC plus, to give you an idea of how just productive he was. Excluding his first year, of course, when he was just 1-for-5 in 1986 with the Blue Jays. He ended the year with 491 home runs. He signed on for one more year back in his hometown of Tampa, but he was basically done. He played only 27 games in 2004. He hit two home runs with the Rays. He was released in late July. So he ended seven home runs shy of 500. You know, might have boosted him a little bit on the, at least on the writer's ballot. Not sure if he would have gotten in, but at least would have gotten better than the sort of paltry support that he did get. But for me, McGriff was one of the many like offense-related horror stories for the 2003 Dodgers. It's one of the oddest Dodgers teams of my lifetime, and possibly just in their franchise history too. They were nominally competitive. They went 85-77. That was a distant second in the NL West, but and also six games back of St. Louis for the wild card. So they were sort of in it, but not really, you know, not just kind of on the outside looking in. But how they did it was just in like crazy. Like the pitching staff led the majors, 3.16 ERA, half a run better than anyone else. They had a 1.28 ERA plus that year, which led the majors. Since joining the National League in 1890, that 1.28 ERA plus was the Dodgers' best in franchise history, at least until the last three seasons, when the Dodgers of 2020, 2021, and 2022 sort of rewrote the franchise record book. In that regard, they've been insane at run prevention the last 3 years, including 1.50 ERA plus in 2022. But and that, I mean, that sort of explains why they've won more than two-thirds of their games over the last 3 years. But back to 2003, that pitching staff had the last great years of Kevin Brown and Hideo Nomo. They picked up Wilson Alvarez, sort of a reclamation project, and he had a resurgent year as a swingman with 2.37 ERA in 95 innings. It might be the best bullpen the Dodgers have ever had. You had peak Eric Gagne, who won the Cy Young with a 1.20 ERA, which was a record at the time. He struck out 137 batters, just ridiculous, in 82 and a third innings. That was the second of three straight years where he had exactly 82 and a third innings. But after him, Guillermo Moda and Paul Quantrill both had sub-2 ERAs. Guillermo Moda pitched in 105 innings. Those two combined for 165 games and 182 and a third innings. That's just an insane workload. It just doesn't happen today. Paul Shuey had a 3 ERA in 62 games. Lefty Tom Martin was a quintessential loogie. Stranded a ridiculous 37 of 42 runners, inherited runners. Just everything sort of went right when they were pitching. But when they were hitting, oh, God, the offense was awful. So McGriff broke down, which probably should have been foreseen given he was 39, even though he hadn't been on the injured list before. So did Brian Jordan, who was actually above average when he played. He had a 112 OPS plus, but he only played in 66 games. He was 36 that year, so you could probably see that coming. He also had just numerous years of playing in both MLB and the NFL, so you can see how it probably finally caught up to him. Sean Green was coming off 2 years of totaling 91 home runs with a 154 OPS plus in both years in 2001-2002. But then he regressed in 2003 to 19 home runs. He did hit an LA Dodgers record 49 doubles, but he was down to a 116 OPS plus in 2003. He was still the Dodgers' best hitter. It was a pretty big decline from like his peak. He also revealed in September that he was playing with a shoulder injury since spring training, which led to that. And he was kind of never the same hitter again after that. He played a few more years, obviously, but just wasn't quite the same as he was at his peak. The Dodgers turned over the middle infield that year to Alex Cora and the newly acquired Cesar Asturias, who were magnificent while wearing gloves, but not batting gloves. Cora had a 66 WRC plus. Asturias was a 56 WRC plus, just terrible offensively. Adrian Beltre was also very good defensively at third. Hit 23 home runs, but well below average hitter at that point, 290 on base percentage and an 86 WRC plus. His breakout year came the next year when he hit 48 home runs, finished second in MVP. Dave Roberts in 2003 was in his second year in LA, but struggled, hit with just a 73 WRC plus. Daryl Ward, who filled in some at first base when McGriff was out, had a 403 OPS in 114 plate appearances. His WRC plus was 8. That's right. That is a single digit. The Dodgers in July acquired Jeremy Burnett and 44-year-old Ricky Anderson for his last major league hurrah. Neither one of them hit. As a team, the Dodgers were dead last in scoring. They averaged 3.54 runs per game. Their 79 OPS plus and 78 WRC plus were also worst in the majors. The 78 WRC plus is third worst in Dodgers franchise history. The only two teams that behind them were in Brooklyn. 1927 had a 73 WRC plus, and 1911 in the dead ball era had a 75 WRC plus. So McGriff ended up being one of the Dodgers' best hitters with his 98 WRC plus, which says a lot about that team. But yeah, that's what I think about. But he's still, despite obviously that sort of down year with the Dodgers, he had just an outstanding career. And we'll find out Sunday whether that means he's going to make it to Cooperstown. Now, obviously, if he doesn't, he could, be on future such committees. But he seems to have a decent shot, at least as of now. We'll find out Sunday. But that's it for today on our leading off with True Blue LA and a Dodgers Rewind. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back a little bit later this week.